Blog Talk Radio.
It's Sunday. It's Wrestling Night in America here on PWTorchLivecast.com. Good Sunday evening to you. I am Pro Wrestling Torch columnist Greg Parks, and this is Wrestling Night in America Livecast for Sunday, November 11th, 2018. First of all, a happy Veterans Day to you here in the States. I believe it's a Remembrance Day in Canada, but the thoughts are with all of those who have served your country. And those still serving. So our thoughts and our thanks are with you on this day. Today we're talking a preview of Survivor Series, which takes place next Sunday, as well as NXT TakeOver War Games, which takes place next Saturday. We'll also look back at this past week's episode of Impact Wrestling, their final hour show, which was one of their major TVs, as well as Lucha Underground, which just wrapped their fourth season with Ultima Lucha Cuatro. And we're going to be doing that with PWTorch.com contributor and Lucha Underground recapper Joel Donnell, who joins me tonight here on Wrestling Night in America. Joel, good to have you with me again.
Thanks for having me, Greg. It's great to be here. Just want to wish everybody a happy Veterans Day. I know we thank all the veterans who have served here, you know, and it's great to be here. Thanks.
Yeah, good to have you along. You're the expert on Lucha Underground, so I'd like to have you here with us. I know I had you here back in July after the first few weeks of the new season of Lucha Underground aired, kind of looked at it big picture on what we'd seen so far and how this season was different than in previous seasons. And now that the season is over, we can kind of take a step back from the season and look at all that transpired over season four of Lucha Underground and what a possible season five may hold. Before we do that, I want to remind listeners that we are here live every Sunday night at 8 p.m. Eastern on PWTorchLivecast.com, unless there is a WWE pay-per-view or a Impact Wrestling pay-per-view on Sunday night. In that case, we go on the air right after the show and take your calls and your thoughts on the show. Big reaction show to that. So next Sunday, when we have Survivor Series, Wrestling Night in America, and I will go on the air live right after the Survivor Series finishes. You can call in with your thoughts, and you can do that tonight as well. 515-605-9345 is the number to call. We'd love to hear from you, the listeners. But we start with Lucha Underground. Ultima Lucha Cuatro finished up this past Wednesday with a two-hour special. It was broken into two episodes. One was the normal one-hour episode. And, of course, this past week was the two-hour episode. Let's start with the first match from the first episode of Ultima Lucha Cuatro. It was a trios championship match, a trios match to determine the trios champions, and it was the Reptile Tribe retaining over the Rabbit Tribe, as well as the somewhat makeshift team of Sammy Guevara, Ivelisse, and Exolicious. Couple of thoughts here right out of the gate, Joel. I was really entertained by the Rabbit Tribe this season. They played a lot bigger part in this season than they did last season when they were just sort of being established. Killer Cross as the White Rabbit, I thought was a great role for him. I thought he played that role well. This is right up the alley of Paul London. You know, he's kind of a unique character, and I think this certainly this gimmick was unique enough to fit those talents. And I thought one of the breakout stars of this season of Lucha Underground was Exolicious, who was on the losing team here. But your thoughts on the match and some of the characters in this match that we saw and what they brought to the table this season.
Yeah, this was a really exciting match between these three teams. Like you noted, the Rabbit Tribe, really has transformed themselves over last season, where last year it was Paul London with Mala Suerte and Saltador, and they were more just kind of a comedy act that was out there, and Paul London was seemingly having fun playing this crazy kind of deranged character. But now this season, they did a total makeover with them by getting Killer Cross in there, who's playing the White Rabbit, as well as L Bunny. And L Bunny is still kind of the comedy, but Killer Cross playing the White Rabbit character brings that seriousness and that legitimacy to that team, where you do believe that they really are deranged, you know, killers. Whereas before, when it was Paul London with Saltador and Mala Suerte, it was just a little bit more comedy and stuff. But Killer Cross just plays that character so well. And I checked out Impact Wrestling this week, too, and he is very good at doing the facial expressions and just bringing the seriousness and believing in this character that he's portraying. And I think that he's going to really fit into Lucha Underground well if they continue on to a next season as being one of those serious characters. Mm-hmm. And then some of the other teams, like you said, Exolicious was one of the breakout characters as well this year. Exo was just a very unique, fun character that got over with the crowd. I mean, it's unconventional from some of the other wrestlers that we've seen on Lucha Underground, but he's been fun to watch. And then the Reptile Tribe, again, another team that's kind of gotten a makeover this season with the addition of Jeremiah Snake, Sami Callihan. Who, again, brings some more seriousness and legitimacy to that team. So this was a really fun match to kind of check out, where these teams were something before, and now they were just something completely new when they were brought into this match. So it's just fun to see how all of these kind of teams have changed over time and kind of seeing how these characters fit into these roles nicely.
With the Rabbit Tribe being eliminated from the match first and kind of surprisingly quickly, I think, there seemed to be some dissension maybe after they were eliminated. Do you see if Lucha Underground goes for a Season 5 that the Rabbit Tribe continues, or was this somewhat of a breakup of that?
I think that they're going to continue because at the end of when they were eliminated, Paul London was scared of what White Rabbit was going to do, but instead he went on the attack. I believe it was Sammy Guevara that he attacked at the end of the match. So I think that they would stay together if they were to continue another season. It just didn't seem like that would be the time to break up those guys when they're so fresh.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. I'd like to see them stay together as well. Match number two from the first show was Taya over Ricky Mundo. This was brought about when Ricky Mundo helped ruin Taya's wedding to Johnny Mundo, and Ricky has been playing somewhat the doppelganger of Johnny Mundo, I guess, and had been treated poorly by Johnny and his friends in the lead up to the wedding, and Ricky took it out on Taya and Johnny Mundo there. Taya winning this very quickly, very decisively. But this wasn't the end of Taya's interaction with Ricky Mundo for the season. But in a vacuum, this was just all about revenge, Taya getting revenge on Ricky Mundo. Was it satisfying from that point of view, do you think?
Yeah, it was exactly what it was supposed to be. It was nice, short, and sweet. And then after the match, as we see later on in part two, that this story is going to continue, but in a different form. With Ricky Mundo's creepy doll, Rosa, seems to be taking over the body of Taya. Yeah. So we're going to see some sort of continuation with this, with the creepy doll at least, and maybe not so much Ricky Mundo.
Yeah, that's been another really intriguing development this season, the relationship between Rosa, this doll, that's this decrepit doll, and Ricky Mundo, who, you know, he was slowly being broken away from the Mundo family, and Rosa was the only one he could rely on. He was sort of his constant a little bit, and he became dependent on her. And now she, as you said, seems to inhabited Taya at the end of this season. So if there is a season five, that's, for me, one of the top stories that I'm going to be looking for in season five is Where does this thing go with Taya and Rosa sort of taking over her body?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely something to be looking forward to for next season, because we've seen these types of things before where these characters are possessed or somebody takes over their body. So this one's just interesting because it is a doll that has now taken over Taya's body, which I know sounds ridiculous, but there's a little bit more to it than just on the surface.
Yeah. The main event of episode one of Ultima Lucha was Son of Havoc defeating Killshot in a mask versus mask match. Killshot was revealed to be Jermaine Strickland, although we know him better as Shane Strickland on the independent scene. Really good match, as you'd suspect, between these two. Going in, did you have a feeling one way or the other which one of these guys would be the one to be unmasked?
No, you know, actually, I thought that it could go either way because both of these guys wrestle on the independent scene without a mask. Son of Havoc is Matt Cross, Killshot is Shane Strickland. So I thought that it was possible to go either way, and that's kind of what left it to be intriguing, is because you didn't have a good sense of who was going to win this match. I mean, it made sense going into it that it would be Son of Havoc because he was the babyface, and I thought that at the end of the episode that they wrote off Killshot's character very nicely.
Yeah, I agree.
Where it was almost like a redemption story for him, which just encapsulated his whole character very nicely at the end of the episode.
Yeah, losing was the best thing for him because he confronted who he was and what he did publicly and was sort of able to get out from under that shadow and not have to hide anymore. I think that was – so in mm-hmm. losing, he was almost the victor.
Mm-hmm.
Searching for more great pro wrestling talk? Then join me, Jason Powell, host of the free weekly Pro Wrestling Boom podcast. Each week, you'll hear the latest news and analysis from me and my team at ProWrestling.net, along with other Pro Wrestling Media members. Plus, the Pro Wrestling Boom podcast features long-form interviews with notable names in the pro wrestling industry. Subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, Downcast, and all your favorite secondary apps, or visit us directly at PWBoom.com. Once again, that's PWBoom.com.
The second episode, the two-hour season finale, possibly series finale, we don't know yet, began with a two-out-of-three falls match that saw Phoenix defeat Dragon Azteca. What have you made of the star turn for Phoenix this year, where he's kind of been another one who's been possessed a little bit, and his relationship with Melissa Santos has gone south? And he's become this heel character. What did you think of that this season?
I think that Phoenix has played out this heel character pretty well, actually. I like that he had the change in the ring attire where he started to wear all black. I could do without so much of the frothing of the mouth where he is spitting kind of all over the place, but it makes sense for the character too, because he is just this this darkness kind of that it took over his body within the story, that this darkness is what brought him back. And that's why he came back as this kind of, you know, crazy character that's been possessed. And I think that Phoenix has really played it well, because over the previous three seasons, he's been that same kind of character, that traditional baby face. So this gave him something new where he felt really fresh going into this. But the story between him and Melissa Santos, it just feels like it's been played out by now.
Mm-hmm.
It just kind of feels like it keeps going on and on and on. And it feels like if there was to be a next season, that they might move away from Santos being involved there with the addition of Shaul Guerrero, who was the guest ring announcer. And I thought that she did a great job on this episode. She brought a lot of energy, and she just really felt fresh.
Yeah, I thought she matched Melissa Santos's intonations and everything like that, because you know, mm-hmm. Melissa brings a lot of energy to that too, more so than what you see at a WWE or an Impact Wrestling or a lot of other shows. Yeah, she replaced Melissa Santos, who ran out of the building after Phoenix won. Shaul Guerrero, the daughter of Eddie Guerrero and Vicky Guerrero, and she give a nod to Vicky by saying excuse me to Famous B when Famous B tried to come out and Bigfoot her a little bit, so she got to shine against him there too. Match number five was the Mac defeating Mil Muertes in a death match. This wasn't too much of a surprise and would have been the most hardcore thing on this show had it not been for the main event. The Mac over Mil Muertes. This is a big win. Muertes, dating back to season one, had been a character that Lucha Underground really built around. His impact, I think, has lessened as the seasons have gone on. The Mac was sort of introduced as a mid-card character. He was part of a trios tag team. Does this signal to you that he's going to have a bigger role, perhaps? And I'm talking about the Mac in season five, if there is one.
Yeah, I think that what you saw in Ultimate Lucha Cuatro is that they're kind of transitioning a lot from the traditional Lucha Underground characters that we've gotten to know, who were the big players like Mil Muertes, Phoenix, Pentagon, some of those Matanza, of course. Some of those players that we've gotten to know to be the main people, and I think that they're transitioning towards the Mac, and Jake Strong are going to be those people who are going to carry Lucha Underground going forward. And the Mac has really done well for himself getting over, but again, he's allowed to do a little bit more than some of the other characters to help him get over, as in he's able to drop F-bombs and kind of give the middle finger to his opponents, which gets him over really well within the temple. But he's really proved himself to be a good worker. He has fun matches, so I think that he is going to be a top player going forward here.
Yeah, he uses the middle finger, he uses a stunner, and I think he even had a few beers after the match in celebration, much like Stone Cold Steve Austin used to do back in the day, for sure. For sure. The semi-main event was Johnny Mundo defeating Matanza Cueto in a sacrifice to the gods match. Given what happened after the match, we know that Jeff Cobb has signed with ROH, so he won't be participating in a Lucha Underground Season 5, so this was his write-off. Johnny Mundo using the glove given to him by Aerostar to – that played a very big role in the match, and I liked the moment of Cueto choke-slamming or slamming Mundo through the roof of one of the side buildings there, and then, Mundo disappears. Everybody thinks he's gone. Everybody thinks he's been sacrificed to the gods, as so many have fallen victim to this season, only to appear out of the freezer and attack Matanza. So that was some good positioning of Johnny Mundo there. He eventually gets the victory over Matanza. What did you think of the match? And, what did you make of this? If it is truly Matanza Cueto's last season, they really built him up for this moment for Mundo to beat him. So, with all the sacrifices that he's made throughout the season, it makes Johnny Mundo look even better by surviving that, I think.
Yeah, I wrote in my notes here that I thought this was a really fun match. If you can get away from the ridiculousness of the gauntlet giving the guys the extra power and giving that extra strength and ability channeling the gods, I thought this was really fun, the way that they played this out. And I thought that this was one of Jeff Cobb's best performances as the Matanza character, because it shows one of Jeff Cobb's biggest strengths is his selling. And he wasn't able to do that so much with this Matanza character.
Yeah.
So the fact that he was able to do that in this match really helped Johnny get over big in this. And I think that Johnny is going to, if there is a season five, he's going to be another guy who's a big player there. Because they established him as a pretty clear babyface at the end of the episode, where he was babyface, heel, and then this year they were kind of a tweener. I hate that term, but he was kind of tweener, heel. He did some heelish stuff, but he also got some pops. So I think that Matanza really put over Johnny Strong, especially Matanza, like you're saying, came into this match so strong. And then Johnny gained that definitive victory. It's going to really help him propel into season five.
The main event was Pentagon Dark defeating Marty the Moth Martinez to win the Lucha Underground Championship in a brutal, brutal hardcore match. Probably the most brutal match you'll see on television until the next one from Lucha Underground. And after the match, Jake Strong, the former Jack Swagger, came out to cash in his Gift of the Gods championship and to win the title from Pentagon Dark. So Jake Strong ends Season 4, ends Ultima Lucha Cuatro as the Lucha Underground champion. So a lot to take in here. Did the match cross the line for you in terms of being able to sit back and enjoy it? Was it – and we've seen brutal matches. I mean, going back to the first season, Vampiro and Pentagon in their match was brutal, and there seems to be one at least per season that really kind of makes your stomach turn by the end of it, and this was certainly the one this season. But do you think this match from a brutality standpoint crossed a line to where you personally couldn't find enjoyment in it?
Well, I think this kind of fell in line with a lot of those other brutal matches with tons of blood that we've seen before. But what really gets me, like, especially in this match, is, like, when you introduce weapons like an axe or some, you know, something ridiculous like that, where it's like, that is meant to kill somebody. Mm-hmm. And if you're introducing that into the match, like, that changes everything, and it undercuts some of the moves when you're introducing a weapon that's going to kill somebody.
The nice thing about that is they did swing it as an axe, and it wasn't like, you know, when Triple H uses the sledgehammer and he covers up the most brutal part of it. It's not like they covered up the most brutal part of it and tried to hit someone. You know, they tried and failed to hit each other with the actual blade.
Sure. Yeah, but it's just those kinds of weapons that really take me out of the moment, because if somebody were to succeed with hitting them with that weapon, I mean, that would mean death. Mm-hmm. I mean, earlier in the season, I can't remember who used it, but somebody used a knife too, where they drove it into somebody's head, and it's like, well, why? If you're going to use a knife, why drive it into their head when you could just stab them and end the match? If a knife is legal within the context of the match, you know, why can't you use it in, you know, a different way like that? So for me personally, just seeing like those types of garbage weapons and stuff like that, that takes me out of the match. But I mean, the as far as the brutality, I mean, it falls in line with some of the other brutal matches that we've seen on Lucha Underground and have become accustomed to. But especially like this match and, you know, some of these other death matches and the Falls Count Anywhere, I mean, we're starting to see they're moving away from more kind of focusing on the athleticism to really putting that focus on the violence. Whereas before, a lot of their identity, like especially in season one, was on the athleticism, the lucha libre. And then they started to become a mix of both. And now we're kind of seeing like, it's a really a hardcore promotion that I know Antonio and Dario say it all the time that they like violence, violence, violence. But there has become just such an emphasis on the violence of the matches. Where it does really take you out of the moment, because you're introducing things like knives and axes, where it really undercuts the rest of the wrestling.
Jake Strong walked out with the Lucha Underground title. He came in about halfway through this season, maybe a little earlier, and you know, he's a guy who had an underwhelming, I think he, given his debut in the WWE version of ECW, a lot of people pegged him as a future star in WWE. He was world champion, but I think he left WWE as somewhat of a disappointment. He hasn't really made a lot of headway in the independent scene, but I thought he's just been tremendous in Lucha Underground. You know, if you'd have told me at the beginning of the season that Jack Swagger, Jake Strong, would walk out as Lucha Underground champion, I probably would have turned up my nose at that notion. But the way everything played out and the way his character was built and the way he performed, I'm totally okay with how the season ended. What's your take on Jack Swagger, how he has ingratiated himself into Lucha Underground this season, and then the idea of him walking out at the end of the season as champion?
Yeah, I mean, Jake Strong was definitely one of the bigger surprises of the season. I mean, my initial thoughts when he debuted was I was kind of thinking, oh, here's another WWE cast off, kind of similar to earlier in the Lucha Underground series when they had Ezekiel Jackson play the big Rick character, and we thought that he was going to kind of be a big player within Lucha Underground, and he just kind of fizzled out there. Jack Swagger playing Jake Strong has really connected with this character. And this is probably the best presentation that we've ever seen of Jack Swagger. He just plays that dominant force very well. And especially now that he's a part of Antonio's entourage, like we saw at the end of the episode, where he plays that championship dominant wrestler very well. You know, when he was in the end in the limo and stuff, where I can see him getting better and doing more stuff on the microphone and cutting those promos, because we saw in some of those backstage segments that he was able to, you know, hold his own in those backstage segments. So I think, again, like I'm saying, that there's a new wave of wrestlers who are going to carry Lucha Underground if there is a next season. And Jake Strong is, I mean, obviously leaving as champion, he is going to be one of those main players. And I think he's a strong choice. And you definitely would not have thought that before his debut.
Some of the major events that happened after the matches, they hit us with a couple vignettes here before the end of the season. Matanza's heart was literally stolen from his body by Black Lotus, which that's a write-off of a character if I've ever seen one. As we talked about earlier, Taya was possessed by Rosa, the doll that Ricky Mundo has been carrying around. In the limo with Jake Strong was Wade Barrett, making a surprise cameo appearance and, giving a nod to his previous Bad News character. So he may end up playing a role, if there's a season five, as the big backer of this consortium here. And the possibility that Dario Cueto is alive now. Lot to unpack here at the end of the season, Joel. I'll let you pick one of those vignettes from the very end before the season wrapped up and talk about them. Which one struck you as possibly the most important going forward into a possible season five?
Yeah, I mean, especially the last segment that we saw where Dario was resurrected by Aerostar, the second character that Aerostar has now resurrected.
Yeah.
And this one seems to be going all right so far, whereas Phoenix, when he came back, that one did not go as planned for Aerostar. But this one will be interesting to see how they use both Dario and Antonio, played by the same
oh,
actor.
Yeah.
If they are kind of going back and forth with those two, but especially to me, this whole storyline of Dario having, you know, being in the limousine and having Agent Winter and all this, the FBI involved. This kind of felt like this was like the penultimate. How do I want to say it? Like the penultimate moment before, like, we're going to get this big conclusion to the storyline that's been going on since season one. So who knows what's going to happen, if there is going to be a season five or not, is very much up in the air. But this felt like this was getting close to the conclusion of that long-term storyline that's been going on for a while. So it'll be interesting to see what they do with Dario. I mean, I'm happy to see. I like the Dario character a lot more than Antonio.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd be happy to see him be a regular back on the air.
Hey, if you're a fan of the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, which you obviously are if you're listening to this right now, check out Solomonster Sounds Off. It's a weekly show covering all the latest news in the world of wrestling, from WWE to Lucha Underground, New Japan, and everything in between, plus listener Q&A, rankings, and more. Check it out in iTunes, Spotify, iHeartRadio, or download directly from thesolomonster.com.
As much as Lucha Underground is about the supernatural and the paranormal, it also has a lot of soap opera undertones. So I can almost guarantee season five will be about Dario and Antonio struggling for power over the temple or over Lucha Underground or what have you, and they will probably share a number of scenes together. I feel like that that would certainly be fitting given what we've seen through four seasons of Lucha Underground. We've talked a lot about the possibility of a season five, and Joel, I know you don't have any inside info on this, but what does your gut tell you about whether or not we're going to see a season five of Lucha Underground?
Well, the big news is that there's a shakeup at El Rey Network, where Mauricio Rios was named the new vice president of programming and acquisitions. So it's to be seen if they want to continue doing Lucha Underground under this new regime. I know that the plan for El Rey is that they want to continue to expand their original content. So it is still to be seen. I mean, this is something that's established on their network. There are people watching it, not a ton of people watching it every week, but they do have a solid following for that network. So it would make sense for them to continue on with this show. But it is possible that they just want to do a whole shakeup. I don't know how much this is costing El Rey Network, if it's worth it to them to keep putting money into this show. But I think that we're going to have a much clearer vision of what's going to happen here in the next few months.
And the money is probably going to be ultimately the deciding factor, as it usually is in these kinds of situations. Mm-hmm. 515-605-9345 is the number to call. I'm Pro Wrestling Torch columnist Greg Parks. I'm here with Joel Donnell, PWTorch.com contributor and recapper of Lucha Underground, which just closed its doors on its fourth season this past week. We will go to the phones to the 478 area code. This is Darrell from Georgia, and I'm going to tell you right now, Darrell, you can save the apologies for the Jaguars losing. I'm waving the white flag on the season. This was it. They came close to beating the Colts. They're sitting at 3-6 right now. I'm saying it's over. It's over. I'm ready to turn the page.
Don't worry about it, Greg. We took a loss today too, so
yeah.
I can't say too much about it.
Understandable.
But how y'all guys doing today, though?
Doing great, Darrell.
Doing well.
What's on your mind today?
Okay. I got a Lucha Underground question because I keep up with it and I watch it every week. If they do come back for another season and everything is a go, is the main story is Penta and Penta Dark, is he still the main story since he lost the title again by somebody cashing in after a long match? Or do they start to go away from him and put somebody else in that title scene as a babyface or, another babyface?
Yeah, that's a good question because, for as popular as Pentagon has gotten on the independent scene, there was talk that WWE was interested in him. He's got a big role in Impact Wrestling now. He's in a lot of indies. I mean, a lot of that started, the introduction to much of the American audience was through Lucha Underground. And he was, if you were to argue whether or not Lucha Underground has made any stars, I think you could make an argument that Pentagon Dark is a star that was made in, now, you know, obviously he was a big star in Mexico too, but to the American audience, I think that started with his role in Lucha Underground, where, you know, he really developed a following over time. So he's not the champion anymore. One would assume that after being beaten by Jake Strong, he would have a good case to have a rematch. But Joel, you talked about a lot of new faces coming in and being mm-hmm. emphasized here throughout season four. Do you see Pentagon as one of those guys who's being phased out over time, or do you still think he plays a prominent role if there's a season five?
Oh, he absolutely has to continue to maintain to be one of those top guys there, because he is the one who brings that Lucha legitimacy to the show. When they're going to have all these new guys, because some of the new big time players I'm listing off is going to be, you know, Johnny Mundo is going to be towards the top of the card. You're going to see Jake Strong. You're going to see the Mac. And none of those guys are traditional Lucha guys. Mm-hmm. So so I would think that it would make sense to keep Pentagon Dark as one of those top guys there, because he is so over with the crowd. It just wouldn't make sense for them to kind of push him down too far. But I think that this season, because it was more central around him as champion, I don't think that we're going to see another championship run from him next year. But I think he'll definitely get his shot, and he'll be a part of some important programs.
Okay. Darrell, back to you for a follow-up or another question.
Okay, another question about Lucha Underground. Now, I know you guys were saying you want to see how this goes with Dario Cueto and his father. But since they're becoming more entwined into the story, how do you guys see they're doing it? Is Dario going to be a good GM, or is it just going to be a mix of bad cop, good cop at times, or both guys still bad?
Ooh, that's a good question, because ideally you'd like to have the audience cheering for one of these guys. And yet, we've seen Dario Cueto, we've seen Antonio Cueto in action. Neither of them are really baby faces. I think if you were to put them side by side, Dario may have the edge going into Season 5 just because of the fact that he's basically risen from the dead. I think that kind of automatically makes one a babyface in some ways. So, it's Antonio in control right now, and the babyface is usually the underdog trying to fight from behind. And if I'm reading things correctly, that's going to kind of be Dario going into Season 5. So I would put my chips as far as if I had to choose a babyface, it would be Dario. Joel, do you see it that way, or do you see both of these guys as heels, maybe even teaming up together?
I think that we're going to see more kind of Dario being playing more of that babyface. I think he's going to retain some of those kind of nastier qualities about him, but I think he's going to be more of kind of that baby face character, because it's yet to be seen what the explanation, what his story was, while he was dead. Was there a story? Did he go somewhere? Did he learn something different that made him change his mind? But I think that his immediate reaction at the end of the episode, made him baby face, by reacting to Aerostar the way he did. So it will be interesting to see what that dynamic's going to be, but I definitely think that Antonio Cueto is going to maintain being that heelish character, and I think that Dario is going to retain some of those kind of nastier qualities, but I think he's going to be more the person that you're rooting for to bring back order to the temple.
And back to you, Darrell, once again.
Okay. A non Lucha Underground question, a WWE question. Today, WWE been hyping a lot of Brock, and probably a lot of this weekend through their YouTube and other social media sites, the match between Brock versus AJ. And they just stated a stat that they only been pinned once since WrestleMania, each person. So with them building this match, do you think they're building it so they can give AJ a win, or they're just building it to make either guy stronger after they have this match?
This is going into Survivor Series. This is one of the most intriguing matches on the card. There's not a lot at stake because neither man's title is on the line here, but there really is a lot at stake because this match took place last year here and Brock Lesnar got the victory. It was one of Brock's better matches. Over the last few years, no surprise, coming against AJ Styles. But this would be a big statement win if AJ Styles were able to beat Brock Lesnar here. So much of the question here is Brock's schedule. What's his schedule here? What's his schedule in UFC? There's just so much we don't know about the purpose and how Brock is being booked. We're kind of going into this dark, Joel, and I think, it would help AJ a ton if he were to win and really cap off his year-long title reign in a really cool way. But historically, WWE hasn't, in these types of matches, had AJ Styles-type guys go over Brock Lesnar-type guys.
Yeah, I mean, this is one of the biggest questions going into Survivor Series is what do they do with this match? And, you know, we've been wrong before about Brock Lesnar, where WWE likes to protect him. They like to give him these big victories with the intention in mind that somebody else is going to, you know, get that rub from him from beating The Undertaker and his complete dominance. But AJ has so much more to benefit from getting this win. I mean, there is not a great reason why AJ should lose this match when Brock, you know, is going to be very limited in the amount of time that he's going to be here. They've already sold fans on the fact that he doesn't care about being here. He doesn't want to be here. His mind is set on UFC. So I think that there's a chance that this match, you know, is not going to be this long epic match, because Brock is also thinking about he wants to stay safe for his UFC fight that's going to be happening later next year.
Yeah.
So it is possible that they go to some sort of non-finish, that they kind of build this up and then it just ends up kind of being a brawl and there is really no winner, so that, you know, AJ stays strong and Brock stays strong. Neither one of them has that loss on the record, but it would just mean so much more for AJ to get that victory. And it would, like you said, Greg, it would just kind of cap off this long year-long title run by getting such a significant victory when a lot of his title matches have not main evented pay-per-views. They've kind of been, you know, middle of the card, you know, and they've just been kind of an underthought. Whereas the main program has been Brock Lesnar and Roman Reigns. So this could be something that could really help AJ if he does get the win.
Darrell, final question or comment for you before we let you go?
Okay. That would be the final question for me. Comment will be, can't wait to see what NXT pull off when they come on. So... That's my waiting. So can't wait to talk to you next Sunday. Greg.
All right, great. We'll talk to you then, Darrell. Thanks a lot for your call.
Thanks, Darrell.
Mm-hmm. Darrell from Georgia checking in with us, and you know, Joel, he mentioned being excited about TakeOver next week. So let's talk about TakeOver War Games. A couple matches have been announced. We still have one episode of NXT TV to go before Sunday, so it's possible some other matches get announced. The title match, Tommaso Ciampa versus Velveteen Dream. Has this been built? I know people are intrigued by Dream. I know they love him. He's sort of this cult figure in some ways. Not a traditional NXT character or WWE character for that matter, I don't think. But do you see him at the level of challenging Ciampa for the NXT title at a major takeover event?
I think so. I think that he's had enough significant matches where you can buy him being in the championship match. I don't think that this is going to be the time for Velveteen Dream to win the championship. I think that Ciampa has a lot more time and a lot more opponents that he can go through as champion. So I don't think that this is going to be Velveteen's time to win the championship. But definitely, yeah, I buy him as a legitimate contender against Ciampa, given that he has had some significant victories and he's been put in prominent places at TakeOver specials.
Do you agree with his babyface turn here? He seemed like such a good heel character. Was this just simply a result of NXT sort of caving to the fans who were already kind of turning him babyface and cheering him as a heel? Did they do the anti-WWE thing where they said, well, the fans are cheering for him anyway, let's just turn him babyface? Or do you think they could have gotten some more mileage out of him as a heel?
I think that this was the right time because a lot of people were starting to get behind him. And as you saw this last week on NXT, I mean, he's over with the crowd as a babyface. So why not try to embrace that and, you know, get something out of that if the fans are really behind him? Why try to push it in the other direction of continuing him as a heel when fans were ready to cheer this guy? And now that he's up against this ultimate heel in Ciampa, this makes up for an interesting matchup because people love Velveteen Dream and they absolutely hate Ciampa. So this is going to be fun to see a real heel against a guy who plays a really nice babyface.
We know you're a pro wrestling fan, but you might like MMA too. And if so, check out our sister site,
MMATorch.com with live fight event coverage, including UFC pay-per-views, previews of all UFC and Bellator events, the daily news digest, exclusive columns, flashbacks, and much more. Check it out. If you're a fan of MMA, you'll be a fan of MMATorch.com.
Speaking of turns, Aleister Black against Johnny Gargano. Johnny turning here, admitting attacking Aleister Black in the parking lot in what has been a months-long storyline on NXT to mask the fact that Black has been out with groin surgery. Black is now back. He will face Johnny at TakeOver War Games. To me, I think Johnny Gargano can pull it off as a heel. I don't really doubt that, but it's sort of like the Becky Lynch thing. Anytime a babyface gets close to that big babyface moment, WWE seems to rob them of it and then turn them heel. You know, Johnny was the biggest babyface maybe that NXT had ever seen. He never got over that hump to beat Tommaso Ciampa and really complete that journey that the fans had been on with him for so long. And it's the same thing with Becky Lynch. And I think that's what I'm a little frustrated with. As a fan, when I go on a journey with a babyface character, I want to reach the mountaintop with them. I want to be satisfied that my journey was worth it for them and that their journey was worth it. And instead, the legs are cut out from under them and they go heel. And it seems to happen too often. So, you know, Becky Lynch has impressed as a heel. You know, she's done a great job. But that's not the question. The question is, should that have happened in the first place? And I'm wondering if a few months from now we're going to be looking back and saying, yeah, Johnny Gargano, he's done a great job as a heel, but was that the right move?
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the biggest things that people are talking about. Was this one of the biggest botched things that NXT has done thus far? Because Johnny Gargano was that organic babyface in NXT. He wasn't one of those indie darlings who, you know, has a lot of hype, the big name recognition going into NXT, so they kind of carry over some of that star power. Gargano, you know, was a nice, you know, addition from the indie scene, but through the booking, I mean, he has really grown into being that big time babyface. And I think, like you were saying, is that a lot of times you see in WWE, before that babyface can get to that big moment, that big payoff, they turn them heel, or, you know, they cut the legs out from under them. And I think, yeah, this is going to be one of those times where you're going to say, man, they really should have turned Gargano into the champion. But I think I can understand some of the rationale of not having him champion, because you saw so much of him in the main event against Ciampa, where maybe they were thinking that maybe people were going to get tired of seeing Gargano, and they thought, well, maybe we want to shake him up a little bit. But I think that they could have gotten so much more out of him finally winning that championship, giving that moment to the fans, you know, giving them that moment to be proud of what they're watching, that they spent all this time investing in this guy, this character, in this true underdog story. And they just kind of took that away. And so I think they set themselves up for a really nice storyline and just kind of diverted into this heel character, which it could turn out fine. I have no doubts that Gargano can play that character, but I think that they just could have gotten so much more out of him being a babyface champion.
The one thing that WWE and NXT did get out of it is I think it made Tommaso Ciampa stronger as a heel, because he kept beating Johnny Gargano and he kept retaining, you know, he retained the title against him and everything like that. But I don't know if it helped him to the point that it was worth not having Johnny win at some point and not having him get one over on on Ciampa. So that's kind of how I fall on that situation. The War Games match, Undisputed Era, will take on the War Raiders, Pete Dunne, and Ricochet. This is one that I'm really looking forward to. I've enjoyed the bickering between Dunne and Ricochet. It's going to be interesting to see how they work as a team with the War Raiders. Undisputed Era, obviously a well-oiled machine. Anytime any combination of these four have been in the ring on NXT television, it's been something worth going out of your way to see. So this is a match, and takeovers have been great, don't get me wrong, But this is a match I'm looking more forward to than I can remember as far as takeovers go in quite a while. So I don't even have anything to say about this match other than, man, I'm really looking forward to this next Saturday night.
Yeah, there is a tremendous amount of star power in this match. All of these guys are excellent workers. And so, absolutely, Greg, that this is going to be, you know, one of, if not the best match on this TakeOver special. Because last year we saw in that War Games match that we weren't sure how it was going to go because we hadn't seen the War Games concept in so long. But I think last year proved that there are some legs to this to the War Games concept here. And so by adding, having Pete Dunne and Ricochet in this match, I think it's going to be really something to go out of your way to see.
Finally, we have Shayna Baszler versus Kairi Sane in a 2 out of 3 falls match for the NXT Women's Championship. This, Joel, to me, feels like Baszler winning, moving on from Kairi Sane. There are a lot of challengers out there for Baszler. You know, just looking at the Mae Young Classic, Io Shirai is one. Tony Storm is one who I think would make a great foil for Shayna Baszler. There are a lot of other possibilities, and this feud with Sane has gone on quite a while, and it's been good, but this feels like the time to settle it and to move on. Do you kind of get this feeling from this feud at this moment, too?
Yeah, I mean, I was surprised that they were even going to have this match because it felt like this story has just gone on for so long. But yeah, I see this as Baszler getting the win and moving on because she has so many other challengers that are lined up for her. So yeah, I mean, this should be a good match, but truth be told, I am kind of getting tired of seeing the 2 out of 3 falls match. I feel like we're just seeing it kind of all over the place in different promotions and stuff. So I'll be happy to be done with this feud because these are two good workers. But I think that Baszler and Sane has kind of played itself out where we've seen what they can do. And I'm ready to see Baszler face somebody else.
It was reported, I believe, by the Wrestling Observer website today that Matt Riddle versus Cassius Ohno is going to be taped before TakeOver goes on the air. So presumably we'll see it on NXT TV the following week. They seem to be setting up Ohno versus Riddle for TakeOver. Are you surprised that it's not going on the TakeOver card as it's being reported? Or do you think it's okay that it's just being used for TV?
I think it's okay being on just TV because Cassius Ohno is established as that gatekeeper guy for TV. And Riddle hasn't. He has a lot of hype coming into NXT, but he hasn't built himself up and established himself enough to be on the TakeOver special. So I think it makes sense for him to get a significant TV win before he's on the main TakeOver card.
And that TakeOver is next Saturday night on the WWE Network. We go back to the phones now to the 814 area code. This is Ryan. Ryan, welcome back to the show. You got your 3-pack of questions for us this week, I assume, so hit us up.
Okay. First question is, I went to my first Angel Gate wrestling show, saw something pretty interesting. I saw a Ring of Honor against Impact wrestling match that featured two different titles on the line, which I believe was the APW title and the British Empire title at stake, and it was TC Scarpelli defeating Kelly Klein. So does that happen often where we see like their promotion match with several different titles on the line and doesn't deal with those promotions?
I think it's pretty rare that we see the titles on the line. I think it's more and more commonplace these days that you will see, for example, an ROH wrestler take on an Impact wrestler, even if they are champions. I mean, Austin Aries was Impact champion, and he would proudly and loudly go to almost any independent show. And I don't know if he was defending the Impact title, but he was certainly there as a belt collector. So, Joel, it's a really interesting time in wrestling and independent wrestling where the lines between companies, major companies, are more blurred than ever before. I mean, 5 years ago, you know, ROH and Impact Wrestling weren't even talking. You know, it was you have your plot of land, I have my plot of land, and that's it. But now, you know, even with the Impact Wrestling officials meeting with WWE officials, they're more than ever, there's a lot of dialogue, there's a lot of sharing of wrestlers, there's a lot of wrestlers appearing on multiple TV shows or multiple live events. So from that point of view, it's a really interesting time in indie wrestling.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about this before last time, Greg, where you can see a lot of the same wrestlers across different promotions now. Like we were saying, Pentagon, you can see him on MLW, you can see him on Impact, you can see him on Lucha Underground. A lot of these guys and girls, you can see them across different promotions. So it's just interesting to see like how they're used as well across different promotions, because Pentagon in Lucha Underground plays a much different character than he does in Impact, because in Impact we see that him and Phoenix, it's woven into the storyline that those two are brothers, whereas in Lucha Underground there is no mention of any relation between those two guys. So it is interesting. Yeah, we're living in an interesting time where you're seeing more promotions working with each other, because I think wrestlers are starting to get a little bit more leverage where they're being able to work in different promotions.
Does that hurt Lucha Underground, for example, that you can see Pentagon Jr. or Pentagon Dark or Penta, you know, whichever incarnation of him you're talking about, does it hurt Lucha Underground that you can see him on two other different shows, which if you're a Pentagon fan, Lucha Underground isn't the only place you have to go to watch him. You can go to these other channels and watch these other shows. Or is it that, as you said, he plays three so distinct characters that you want to see him on every show?
I think it's more the latter, where people, if they're invested in the wrestlers, I think it's less about kind of the brands that you watch, and it's more kind of the wrestlers that you're fans of, and you're going to follow those wrestlers to the promotions that they go to. Because like for me, for example, I'm interested in Pentagon. And so I'd like to seek out, if I'm not watching all of Impact, I want to see his matches. So then I will go and check out what's he doing in Impact, what's he doing in MLW. And so it kind of gets me involved with these other promotions, even if I don't follow them regularly like I do Lucha Underground. So I think it's getting some more exposure for these other promotions, because these people are more fans of the wrestlers and not so much the promotions themselves.
Ryan, back to you for your second question.
Okay, second question is about the location of this event I went to last night with the Intermission match. It's called the Wrestleplex. And as you know, like, pretty much it is a wrestling arena, sort of like the Temple and Lucha Underground, except it's more get it because it's like right outside of Pittsburgh. But, you know, it has like the stage way and the lights and everything you would see traditionally in like a wrestling show you would see on TV. So my question is, are there many federations out there that are smaller that have their own like setup that's permanently owned by that promotion?
It would surprise me. You know, they even like PWG would run places that they didn't own. They would run it frequently, but there were other things, not even other wrestling promotions that would run those event centers or those rec halls. It was other whatever you want to call it, other events that were not pro wrestling related would run there. So that would really surprise me if any kind of independent wrestling organization really had their own quote-unquote arena. They may have a home arena that they use frequently, that they may run shows frequently, but mm-hmm. most promotions don't run shows often enough to where them owning the building for that sole purpose makes financial sense, Joel. I think that probably explains it. If you have anything else to add, feel free.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah, that would be too – I think it would be too expensive for promotions to have their own building like that. Like I was going to say, from here locally in Minneapolis, St. Paul, our biggest independent promotion is First Wrestling, which gets its name from First Avenue, and that's kind of their main building where they run their main shows there. But they do not, certainly do not own First Avenue.
Yeah, as popular as indie wrestling has become, I don't think that the promotions are well off enough to own their own buildings yet. I'll say yet. Ryan, back to you for your third and final question.
Someday.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, my question is, I went to another show on Friday, which was Stan Styles' Intergender Wrestling. What was interesting about that show was Sue Young wrestled on the show, and she brought a casket to the ring, which was pretty surprising since there were only about 100 people in attendance for like such a small show. I thought that was surprising. She went all out and did the full gimmick with bringing a casket. So does she do that for every appearance she does, or is this pretty much up to like the town if she can find a casket to bring to the show?
You know, that's a good question. I'm sure she's not traveling with a casket. I can imagine the airline fees would be pretty pricey. That may be up to the promotion. You know, each promotion may have their own gimmicks that they store away somewhere. And if this promotion just happened to have a casket on hand, she may have used it for that purpose. So that's kind of my thinking there, Joel. Unless you have any more insight on casket travel.
No, but I was going to say I did see Sue Young at an independent promotion probably about a year ago or so, and she did not have a casket with her,
okay.
And that
so,
was, again, with First Wrestling at the First Avenue show.
Only special appearances, then, does the casket come out. So
yes.
I guess that's the explanation. Ryan, thank you, as always, for calling in, and look forward to talking to you again soon.
Okay. Thanks again, and I think maybe
I cut Ryan off. Sorry, Ryan. Go ahead.
Yeah. That arena might also be used as a wrestling school, which might be the reason why they own the facility.
Yeah. When you throw in wrestling schools, I mean, that's a way to make more money for the promotion. So that would make more sense, I think, if it was owned by the promotion.
You love pro wrestling podcasts, but you might not have time to listen to all of them. We'll help you decide which ones to listen to and keep you up to date on the ones you're missing at pwpodcasts.com. That website features written recaps of all of the top pro wrestling related podcasts, including Steve Austin, Bruce Pritchard, Edge and Christian, and so on. Check it out. It's pwpodcasts.com, your home for written recaps of all pro wrestling personality hosted podcasts.
I do want to get to Impact Final Hour before we get to another call, and then we'll wrap up by previewing Survivor Series taking place next Sunday evening. Impact had their major TV show this past week, which was the last from the tapings that they did after Bound for Glory. They will be taping this week from Las Vegas, so the next show on Thursday will be emanating from Vegas. But this week saw the Lucha Bros defeat the OGs. Jordynne Grace made her in-ring debut for Impact, defeating Katarina. Brian Cage went to Ohio, fought Sami Callihan in a promotion there, as well as having to fend off some of OVE and Ohio's finest. Moose defeated Eddie Edwards. Allie was summoned by James Mitchell, and she ended up going with him despite the pleadings of Kira Hogan. So we'll see where that leads. Eli Drake attacked Joseph Park. Apparently, Eli Drake is one of the few who realizes that Joseph Park is, in fact, Abyss. And in the main event, Johnny Impact defeated Killer Cross to retain the Impact Championship. Next week from Vegas, Impact will take on Matt Sydal. Sami Callihan challenges Brian Cage for the X Division Championship. Tessa Blanchard will be in action, and also there will be LAX and Eli Drake. So, Joel, I know you told me that you watched Impact this week. This was your first time watching since after Slammiversary. First, big picture, anything jump out to you about this show? Positive or negative, I guess I'll say.
I would say that, you know, more so as a whole of Impact Wrestling is like they have a tremendous roster of talent. Mm-hmm. They have a tremendous talent here. And I just wish that Impact would find their identity and really put something together with some good booking and just create a more solid, well-rounded show. Because it feels like at times when I was watching this, it feels like they're trying to channel some of these other promotions, especially with the whole James Mitchell segment. Mm-hmm. Felt like they were trying to like pull something from Lucha Underground there, which it just didn't feel right in the rest of the show. Mm. And then there's some other backstage segments with Scarlett Bordeaux, which just felt like it was way past its time of when that segment would be effective. Yeah. So it just feels like Impact is still struggling to find their identity. But, man, they have a lot of talent there that you think that they'd be able to capitalize on that more.
You said you're a big Pentagon fan. What do you make of him being a part of this tag team with his brother here as the Lucha Brothers in Impact? Do you think that's an underutilization of him in Impact, or do you think that it fits because it's different than what he does in MLW or different than what he does in Lucha Underground?
Yeah, like you were saying, that it's something that's different for him, where he, in the other promotions, he's more kind of the alpha male guy. And here he's tagging with his brother Phoenix, and they're both very effective. But as you're seeing in, especially in Lucha Underground, you can get a lot out of both these guys as single stars. So there, you could make Pentagon one of your top guys there, as well as Phoenix, having both doing their own thing. But yeah, this gives him something different to do by tagging with Phoenix here. So it's something different than Lucha Underground or MLW.
You mentioned Scarlett Bordeaux, and she continues her her quest to find someone to give advice to or manage or whatever she's doing. She's accepting tapes from fans. She was giving advice to Fala Ba and KM once again, who were desperate for her attention. And you made the comment that segment feels like something that's sort of transported here from a different era. And I would agree that the portrayal of Scarlett in Impact is more of an Attitude Era remnant, I think. But to that mm-hmm. point, is it better because the whole show is not filled with things like this, and wrestling has gotten so far away from emphasizing females in this way? Does it work, and can you do it with one character? You know, even if the rest of the Knockouts are serious wrestlers, can you get away with doing this sort of character with just one person? Does it make it more acceptable, I guess?
I mean, you can get away with it, but it's still a reminder of the objectification of women in wrestling. Mm-hmm. And I think that's, especially in WWE, it's just something that we're so far past at this point. I mean, there's still remnants of it in WWE with the Diva era. There's still some women wrestlers who are reminiscent of the Diva era, but I think it's just something that we're past as a whole, where I just don't think that it works in any capacity within the wrestling show. Where it really stood out to me when I was watching this as something that just didn't fit with the rest of what was happening on Impact.
Yeah, that's a good point too. And you know, it's one thing, like you said, to build an entire promotion around the supernatural, kind of like what Lucha Underground has done. It's another thing to put a supernatural storyline in the middle of everything else being reality-based. And it's almost mm-hmm. like we kind of accuse WWE of trying to serve all these masters of you know, wanting to do drama, wanting to do comedy, wanting to appeal to longtime fans, but also children, but also families. And in the end, nobody gets served. And I think you're making the argument that Impact Wrestling is kind of doing the same thing by not focusing on one way of telling stories, rather trying to do it in a bunch of different ways.
Yeah, it just feels like they're trying to pull from all these different areas, whereas it would be just much easier to have a much more of a straightforward wrestling show where the emphasis is about what happens in the ring, finding out who's the best. And instead, I feel like they get too caught up in trying to do what haven't we seen before? How can we do something that's different? How can we do something that's going to get some buzz that's talked about? And I think that these segments, like what you saw with Sue Young and James Mitchell, that it's not so much about something that gets talked about in a positive light and more just kind of negatively, where it just doesn't fit into the show. Mm-hmm. You've seen WWE do it well with The Undertaker, where he is kind of the supernatural. He's the one exception that you saw on the show for a long time until Bray Wyatt started to do some of that kind of stuff. But I just think that this segment by itself just doesn't fit into what Impact's doing.
Back to the phones we go. I believe this is Craig on the line. Let me put him on the air, if in fact it is. Craig, is this you?
This is Craig.
Wonderful. Craig, good to talk to you again. How are you this Sunday evening?
Lions got trounced, so I could be better.
Okay. Well, at least they got beat by a good team. At least they got beat by a good team in the Bears. You know, Jacksonville lost to the Colts, which is not a good team. So,
but as a Vikings fan, we need those Bears to lose.
Oh well. So someone else is upset that the Bears won today.
We got you. I'll be at the Thanksgiving Day game. We got you.
I appreciate it.
We'll take care of them Bears. you guys have been talking about the TNA and the Lucha. I've been thinking this whole time, because I don't get pop, and I was gonna get the Impact pay per view the Bound for Glory a couple weeks ago, mm-hmm. and it was like $40, and I was like, no, it's $40. I can see all these people on MLW, on like a million shows on Fight TV and all that stuff. And it's sort of the same thing with Lucha. And what you guys are talking about with all these wrestlers on all these different shows, do you think they're playing as distinct enough characters to have value watching all the shows they're on? Because you said they play different characters on every show. And Lucha is different, but, you know.
I think you've got to look at it on a wrestler-by-wrestler basis. So I don't think you can make the blanket statement that's, you know, all the wrestlers that fight for these different promotions are all playing different enough characters to where you would need to go out of your way to watch them on every show. I think it's really a case-by-case basis. And, you know, this is – make no mistake about it, this is a good thing for the wrestlers. And for too long, the wrestlers, independent wrestlers, have really had it tough. And they still do to a certain extent, but I think we're seeing with all this talent sharing, we're seeing guys who can really make a very good living if you're not wrestling for WWE, for example. You know, Johnny Mundo wrestling in Lucha Underground, he's wrestling in Impact, he's wrestling all over the place. So, you know, he's doing fine. Same with Pentagon, you know, he's wrestling all over, plus in Mexico and things like that. So first things first, it's about time the wrestlers are doing well for themselves, even if for us fans, we're a little more conflicted about, gee, you know, I want to support Impact and watch their show, but so many of the guys I can see elsewhere. Or same thing with Lucha Underground or MLW or anything like that. So, Joel, it's a boon for the wrestlers, mm-hmm. but for the fans, there may be more picking and choosing. And it also, we may have talked about this before. I know I've talked about it with others, is that it's hard for each company to really define itself with its roster. It's hard for them to have stars that you can count on representing the brand. And, you know, there are guys who are synonymous with WWE, just like in there were guys who were synonymous with WCW. With the Lucha Underground and Impact and MLW, because so many of them wrestle so many different places, it's harder to pin down guys who are Impact Wrestling guys or guys who are Lucha Underground guys and identify talent with a promotion.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, because we've talked about that before, where you're seeing a lot more of these independent wrestlers are spread out through these different promotions. And that is great for the wrestlers because that's more exposure for them. They're working more dates. That means they're making more money. But it also hurts those promotions to create an identity for themselves. Like we were just talking about with Impact, where you can see a lot of these wrestlers on Lucha Underground and MLW, where it's hard for them to create an identity. where ideally you'd like to have that promotion. The promotion themselves would like to be the destination to see Pentagon, to see Phoenix, to see Johnny Impact. They would like to be that exclusive place where if you're a fan of that wrestler, you got to go watch their promotion. But I think what's changed now is that people have kind of their favorite wrestlers, and they like to seek out their matches, which also can help those promotions to an extent. But it also kind of spreads it thin, whereas instead of just getting invested all into Impact, you're now watching all these different promotions instead of just the one thing.
And I think the economic reality of these wrestling promotions also prevents them from signing guys full-time. I mean, you take Impact Wrestling, for example. They don't run house shows. They can't afford to sign Johnny Impact to an exclusive contract. That would take more money than they have available to do. Lucha Underground doesn't run house shows. They're basically a TV product. They don't have the money to be throwing at somebody to say, okay, we're going to tape 22 episodes of TV with you, then we're not going to use you for 6 months, but you can't wrestle anywhere else. You know, these companies don't have the money to be throwing at guys to make them exclusive either. Craig, I know I'm not even going to ask you if you have another question or comment. I know you do, so hit us with a follow-up or another question.
Well, as a follow-up to that, and my next question, do you think, because with all the talk of the mystery promotion that might be being created by the Jags owner and co-owner, son, whatever, and all this talk about a new promotion coming up that has a wrestler for the wrestlers by the wrestlers or whatever, you know, do you think that consolidating all that talent into a promotion would be good for wrestling? And do you think it would be good for wrestlers and good for fans? Like, those are three separate things.
Yeah. I think it would. It depends. If you are talking about a wrestling promotion, if it's by the wrestlers, for the wrestlers, presumably they would have employee status. They would get health insurance through the company, and all the advantages that employees would get that independent contractors in WWE or elsewhere don't get. If that's the case, I think it would be good for wrestlers. I think it would be good for wrestling promotion. We could make the argument WWE wouldn't like it. It wouldn't be good for wrestling promotions. But I think it's a direction that wrestling promotions need to move toward. So they may not like it, but from an outsider looking in, I think it would be good for promotions to move in that direction. For fans, it's too early to say. I think having a new promotion of that magnitude with that kind of financial backing and presumably on, I'm going to assume it's on a major television network, if it's going to have the names that are rumored to be behind it, as well as the Khan family who owns the Jacksonville Jaguars, I think it would be good for fans. I think anything to rouse WWE out of its creative slumber would be good, even if there's really no serious way they could challenge WWE for number one in the hierarchy. So I really don't see a downside, Joel. I mean, from a promotions or a wrestler or a fan point of view, if this new promotion was to be all that it promises, do you see any downside for any of those groups of people?
No, I think it's something exciting. Obviously, a lot of people want to speculate about it, but we don't know exactly what this promotion would look like. I mean, the best idea that we would have is, would it be something like All In? You know, how involved would Cody and the Bucks be with this promotion? Because from what I understand is that it's Jim Ross and Chris Jericho are kind of the two figureheads of this promotion. So it'll be interesting to see how they kind of make this show look and what it would be, how it would be different. And then you're asking about how would this benefit the wrestlers? Well, that's something that's interesting too, because Cody definitely has the philosophy of wrestlers should have the freedom to work in different promotions. So you would think that the wrestlers wouldn't be exclusive to this new promotion. But then if they're not exclusive to that promotion, are they still going to get those other things that like Cody preaches about, which would be like health insurance?
Yeah, the benefits.
You know, and getting days off. Yeah, and getting those types of benefits. How would that all be structured? Because I would find it hard to believe that these guys would get health insurance and also work in these different promotions.
Yeah.
Because then they would be more of an independent contractor than an employee. So it's going to be interesting to see how they do that. Because like we were talking before, you're seeing these wrestlers that are more kind of the independent contractor, like they're supposed to be, going around to different promotions. But if they want to offer health insurance, then they would have to be employees, and that would probably mean that they would be exclusive to the new promotion.
Yeah, and this could all be for naught. I mean, this may not amount to anything. It's just rumor and innuendo at this point. So, it'll be interesting. It's something to talk about, though, if nothing else. Craig, back to you. Do you have a final question or comment for us tonight?
My final one was about the Lucha Underground and the Netflix deal, because they have seasons 1 and 2 on Netflix. They don't have season 3, and obviously they don't have season 4 just concluded, but did they stop with season 2, or are they going to put season 3 on? Are they going to put season 4 on? And do you think there's something to do there with Netflix?
I know
they have all these on Netflix. I'm sorry, they have all these things on Netflix, like these like the break with Michelle Wolf and the Hasan Minhaj show and stuff like that. That's weekly. I was hoping that Netflix would go that way with Lucha, and they didn't. And I'm wondering if even in a discussion or realm of possibility.
I know there was a lot of excitement when Lucha Underground got onto Netflix, because they kind of broke down that barrier. Netflix is obviously huge, and Lucha Underground, I think, was the first wrestling promotion of any salt to get onto Netflix. But I think that deal, you know, just by virtue of not seeing season 3 on there, kind of tells you that that deal has ended, and I don't think there's really anything coming down the pipeline to get Lucha Underground season 3 or 4 on Netflix. Joel, maybe you have more of an inside view of that than I do.
Yeah, what I've heard too is that Lucha Underground is actually going to be leaving Netflix within the next few days here. That Netflix has chosen not to renew to put more Lucha Underground there. So I believe that it's in the next, I think it's November 15th or so, that it's expected to actually leave Netflix altogether.
Okay. All right, so I guess you'll have to get your Lucha Underground fix somewhere else going forward and await a possible season 5. Craig, thank you for calling in. Appreciate the call as always, and we'll talk to you again soon.
All right, love you guys. Have a good one.
Take care.
Support what we do here at the PW Torch Livecast when you shop Amazon. Simply go to pwtorch.com/Amazon. We've simplified the page. There's a big Amazon logo. You click on it. It takes you right to Amazon's homepage. But because of that small detour, we get credit for your visit, and we get a commission on anything you buy on that shopping trip. That's pwtorch.com/Amazon. Thank you very much for your support.
Now we will close things out by previewing Survivor Series, which, again, Wrestling Night in America next Sunday night will go on the air live, taking your calls about Survivor Series after Survivor Series goes off the air, and we'll hang out as long as we've got phone calls about the show, and it's shaping up to be a pretty major show. Lots of Raw versus SmackDown matches, lots of champion versus champion matches. Ronda Rousey versus Becky Lynch, Raw Women's Champion versus SmackDown Women's Champion. It's been a battle of the mic work over the last few weeks, Joel, and when I was hosting the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling podcast post-show of SmackDown this past Tuesday with Rich Fan, I kind of asked him the same question. We've seen a couple promos from Becky Lynch. We've seen a couple promos from Ronda Rousey. Who who is winning the promo battle with one episode of each show to go before Survivor Series?
Well, what really stood out to me this past week on SmackDown is that Becky Lynch has this, you know, untouchable type of swagger about her.
Yeah.
When she comes to the ring, I mean, she can just command the mic. And Ronda Rousey is getting better about it, but I think that Becky Lynch is just, man, you believe what she says. There's just something special about Becky Lynch that WWE definitely needs to capitalize on. But this match as a whole, I can't remember the last time that I was so excited to see, you know, a women's match in this prominent of position. I mean, this is going to be a really exciting match to see what WWE does with this.
Mm-hmm.
But also it begs the question, is this match happening too soon? Because Becky Lynch, you know, a lot of fans, they want her to be the babyface. And it seems that maybe WWE is kind of shifting her towards more a likable character instead of pushing her as this heel. So, I mean, I just – both these wrestlers are such on this trajectory that I don't want it to stop. But it also, it feels like this is the right time for this big match. But I don't want to see either of them lose.
Yeah. And maybe you won't. Yeah, that's –
maybe I won't, yeah.
Yeah, that's going to be the interesting thing. You take a look at all these matches and the booking and the finishes are really going to be interesting. I think that's going to be a really big talking point coming out of this show, big picture-wise, the finishes of some of these matches. Seth Rollins versus Shinsuke Nakamura, Intercontinental Champion versus United States Champion. Do you see this being a match? And Seth Rollins, his work in the ring has been rivaled by maybe AJ Styles. I would even argue that Rollins has been more consistent over the long term than Styles has even. Is this a match where Rollins can bring out the old Shinsuke Nakamura as far as Nakamura's in-ring work?
I think that's up to Shinsuke. I mean, it's up to how much he wants to bring it to the ring, because I think that Rollins is definitely going to be up for the task because this is a big match for him. But it's up to Shinsuke, and I think that if Shinsuke can really bring it this time and bring a high-quality – high impact match, then he can really turn around his WWE career from where it's been going so far, where he's gotten this reputation of being kind of this lazy worker who's content, you know, just kind of going through the motions, just kind of using his character to get himself over more so than the in-ring work. But this is an opportunity for Shinsuke to take this seriously and take it to the next level. And I think that he can raise a lot of eyebrows if he can really take it to the limit with Seth Rollins.
We've talked about Brock Lesnar versus AJ Styles earlier in the show. Team Raw versus Team SmackDown. This is the 5-on-5 elimination match, traditional Survivor Series match. So far, Team Raw is set up as Drew McIntyre, Dolph Ziggler, Braun Strowman, and two wrestlers to be announced versus Team SmackDown, which is The Miz, Daniel Bryan, Shane McMahon, Rey Mysterio, and Samoa Joe. The Miz and Daniel Bryan this past week on SmackDown, what did you think of their interplay? I thought it was fantastic. I thought the fact that they were actually getting along being the swerve for much of the show and then eventually it falling apart by the end was really clever. So I did enjoy that. What was your take on The Miz and Daniel Bryan's relationship on SmackDown this past week?
Yeah, I mean, these guys are both really good together. It'll be interesting to see what they do with The Miz, because it felt like they were starting to move him more towards kind of a babyface direction, because he felt more likable in this. Even though he still had his heel quips, he was much more likable in his presentation than we've seen The Miz in previous incarnations. So that's kind of the intrigue of this match going forward, is that Team SmackDown is kind of has all these different conflicting personalities, different motives and stuff. And so how are they going to work well together? And so it'll be interesting to see what they do with The Miz and Daniel Bryan going into this, because I thought that their feud had kind of played itself out. And it seems that they're now kind of continuing this and now getting Shane McMahon involved, for potentially what looks like it could be, you know, Shane and Daniel Bryan going forward after this, and then Miz goes into a different direction.
Oh, dear. Let's hope not. But Team Raw has two spots yet to be filled. Is there anyone on the roster without anything to do at Survivor Series yet who stands out as maybe a prediction you want to make as to who makes this team?
You know, you could probably throw in Bobby Lashley. Seems like he would be somebody who could fit in on that team. I don't think Finn Balor, man, I have no idea what's going on with Finn Balor. I mean, it just feels like they just keep jobbing him out. When this feels like this would be the opportune time with Roman Reigns out and, you know, having a shortage of baby faces, that you would think that he would be somebody, that they would start to give a push to. But, you know, it seems like Bobby Lashley could be somebody who's there. Elias could get a spot in there as well. So they've got a couple people in there who could fill those spots. But you'd like to see Finn Balor, you know, get a spot like that to be on this pay-per-view. But as far as it looks right now, I mean, it doesn't seem like he's going to be on it at all. But maybe a pre-show match. But that seems to be disappointing.
Lashley and Elias were actually the two names that came to mind first for me. And another name I'll throw out there is Dean Ambrose. He's not got anything to do yet for Survivor Series. So, you know, interfering in Seth Rollins versus Shinsuke Nakamura seems like a good guess.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also possible that Baron Corbin recruits him to be a part of Team Raw. And that would be an interesting dynamic with Braun, Ziggler, and McIntyre as well. The Raw women will be led by Alexa Bliss, although she will not be wrestling in the match, against the SmackDown women of Carmella, Naomi, Sonya Deville, Asuka, and Charlotte Flair. So those are the SmackDown women versus the Raw women. We'll get the announcement for the Raw women tomorrow night on Raw. Nia Jax and Tamina, I'll talk about that because I think they are two contenders to be on the Raw women's team. I think Alexa Bliss would, even though she's had a checkered history with Nia Jax, I think she would choose Jax and Tamina if she wanted to win badly, and I think she does. What do you make of their team up this past week? You know, a lot of people speculating that it's going to lead to the introduction of the women's tag team championship, but I certainly didn't expect Nia and Tamina to end up as a tag team.
Yeah, and I'm not sure that tagging them together is the greatest idea because I think both of them are pretty limited in what they're able to do in the ring to make them tag team champions. I'm not sure if that's the right direction that you think.
60 seconds.
Right now, it seems like, especially Nia Jax planting the seed that she wants to go after Ronda Rousey's title following this match. You know, and then Tamina also could be somebody who is kind of the enforcer in that match. So, I mean, we'll see what happens there. But I don't know if adding another championship in the women's tag title is the right direction to go, because it feels like if that is where they're going, they're almost creating like this artificial demand for it by putting certain women together. Like Sasha Banks and Bayley, and then now Nia Jax and Tamina, where it feels like they're just starting to put some women together to make people think, oh, maybe they could tag together, but they might actually be better off just remaining single.
10 seconds.
Yeah. The next match, the AOP, the new Raw Tag Team Champions against the Bar. To me, this is going to be a big test for the AOP. You know, they debuted with some fanfare. They disappeared for a while, came back with Drake Maverick as their second. So this is a match that I'm going to be watching closely because I think this is going to be a big test for the AOP to see where they are. Because if they have a really solid match with the Bar, I think their stock will rise even further.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, AOP has a lot more to gain by winning this match than the Bar does. Because the Bar, Sheamus and Cesaro, they are what they are. I can't really see them, you know, gaining anything from this because they are in the position that they are in WWE. Whereas the Authors of Pain, I mean, they are a relatively new act that it could be on the rise if they get a significant win here over the Bar.
The Raw tag teams, there will be five teams participating in that match against the SmackDown tag teams. We know that the Usos are team captains by virtue of their victory over New Day this past week on SmackDown, although they did invite New Day to be a part of that team. I'm trying to think if there's enough teams on each brand to fill out this match. I'm assuming there are, but we may end up seeing some, you know, the return of Curt Hawkins and Zack Ryder maybe on the docket. I think they did end up being part of a team on one of the house shows here. So that's going to be interesting because I think, you know, do you think this sets the stage for possible challenges? You know, the Bar and the AOP are tag team champions. Neither team really has a feud right now. So is this going to be something where we're going to watch to see who really impresses out of this match and they could end up vaulting into their respective tag title feuds on their brands?
Yeah, that's definitely a possibility here. But as you were saying, like, I don't know who's going to fill out the rest of, you know, this match. I think that they're going to have to really pull at some of these tag teams that maybe we haven't seen for a while. I mean, maybe you could see Fandango and Tyler Breeze, maybe the B team comes back. You know, some of these other more obscure tag teams that aren't regulars on the show.
Well, on Raw, you've got the B team, you've got the Revival, you've got Slater and Rhino, you've got the Ascension, and
oh boy,
Bobby Roode and Chad Gable. So that could be your five from Raw. SmackDown, you've got the Usos and New Day, you've got Primo and Epico. Man, the SmackDown side, I'm probably missing somebody. But those are the three names that come to my mind right off the bat. I know they just did, I feel like they just did a big tag team match on SmackDown where they had a lot of tag teams.
The Bludgeon Brothers?
Well, Rowan's injured.
Oh, that's right. Oh, and I think Harper, too, has a hand injury as well.
Okay.
So.
Let's see. Now I have to go to Wikipedia for this because I really – okay, you've got – well, they just made their return on SmackDown this past week. You've got Sanity. So you got the Usos, New Day, Sanity, Primo, and Epico, and one more team – Harper and Rowan are out. You've got Anderson and Gallows, the Bar. Or not the Bar, but the Club. The Club and the Bar. So there you go. There's your five teams, I guess. You're scraping the bottom of the barrel, but you can do it.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I was thinking, too, is that, man, you're really reaching to pull some tag teams in here to fill out this match.
That may be a pre-show match.
Yeah.
And we've also got Buddy Murphy against Mustafa Ali for the Cruiserweight title. Mustafa Ali is a guy who's criminally underrated just by virtue of being on 205 Live. You could make the argument that everybody on that roster is underrated. But Ali did a really good job with some of the feuds on 205 Live over the last few months. Buddy Murphy winning the title from Cedric Alexander, who had held it for a long time, won the title in Australia. So Buddy Murphy versus Mustafa Ali, I guess the only question about this is, does this make the pre-show or does it make the main show?
Given the history of the Cruiserweight Championship matches, I think it's a safe bet to say that it'll be on the pre-show. But this will be interesting because I don't really follow 205 Live too closely, so I haven't seen a ton from Mustafa Ali. So I'm interested to see how he does in this championship match.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it'll be a really good match, and I think it would be a decent match to put, you know, in between some of the other bigger matches on the actual main show. You know, and not necessarily as a buffer mm-hmm. match, but just to give a taste of something different on this show, which it could need. It's going to be another big show because Survivor Series is one of the big four, big five, so it's going to be a major show here for WWE, but we'll see. Probably, if history is any guide, the pre-show. So that will wrap things up for this week. Joel Donnell, thank you again for joining me. Always a pleasure to talk to you about Lucha Underground and WWE.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me on, Greg. It's always fun.
And don't forget, we are on next week after Survivor Series, and if it's Sunday, it's Wrestling Night in America.
PW Torch Livecast listeners, this show can be ad-free and commercial-free with a VIP membership. VIP members not only enjoy all 7 episodes of the PW Torch Livecast with no commercials and the ads and plugs edited out, but they also get ad-free addition to the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling post shows and the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling podcast. Also, part of a VIP membership and exclusive shows such as the Every Single Day Wade Keller Hotline, the 3 times a week Bruce Mitchell audio show, including a new weekly mailbag edition with Bruce, the Fix with Todd Martin that I also host, post-pay-per-view roundtables that I host, and other shows on specific topics, including the new Talking Honor podcast with Lola and Harley discussing the latest in ROH, including a review of the latest TV show. And now we are proud to announce that Alan Cunahan, known as Alan4L, has brought his talents to PW Torch after many years at The Observer, and there's a lot of excitement about his new weekly show called Alan4L's Pro Wrest Paradise, with the best coverage of New Japan, all of Japan, the UK indie scene, including the US indie scene. So be sure to become a PW Torch VIP member for as little as $8.25 a month on average, and have multiple new VIP exclusive and ad-free podcasts every day on customizable feeds on your iPhone and Android device. For more information and our sign-up form, go to pwtorch.com/govip, and you'll find out what else comes with VIP membership, including a weekly newsletter, over 1,500 back issues of the Pro Wrestling Torch weekly newsletter that started it all, ad-free access to our mobile and desktop sites, and more. Full lineup, full details, and the sign-up form at pwtorch.com/govip.